Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, September 10th, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live at our new times from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time and from 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are available 24/7 on DrSaputo.com and PRN.FM.
Today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we got a great show for you today that's going to include Stanford University's hatchet job on organic foods.
And can obesity affect cognitive function in adolescents?
And how a pregnant mom's habits can lead to obesity in her child.
And how the values of the affluent and the poor differ when reacting to stress and chaos.
And does appearance mean more to young adults than their health? Isn't that going to be a surprise?
And if you'd like to join in our conversation and have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call on Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. Pacific Time or 10 to 11 Eastern Time. And that was just that's the right time. Those are the new times.
New
on PRN.FM.
The new time.
And the number here is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Well, here's a highly debatable study that was done at Stanford claiming that there isn't much difference between organic and conventional foods. Well, how can they claim that there isn't much difference? I mean, wouldn't common sense just tell you that food with hormones and endocrine disruptors and neurotoxins and carcinogens are not healthy? I mean, they may say that they just put a little bit on it, but we eat a lot of food.
It's insane.
And there's different ones that are all being interacted with each other.
It's insane. This is a hatchet job that came out of Stanford University. And, Mike Adams did a really wonderful expose on this. I would check with naturalnews.com to see what he had to say about that, because it was really revealing. And one of the things he talked about is how they imported people into the study who were known hatchet people who had done the same kind of work for the people who were involved with the tobacco industry some time ago. And that turned out to be something that was a disaster.
Well, there were conflicts of interest all over the place because they were working with wealthy corporations that had conflicts of interest in the fact that they were trying to promote the use of pesticides and genetically engineered foods.
Well, that's right. But this particular guy, Ingram Olkin, O-L-K-I-N, is a PhD who was the head of the department at Stanford University in the Department of Statistics, who also worked for the tobacco industry, trying to say that there wasn't anything wrong with tobacco. And that was, it's like, outrageous that somebody would do something like that. And yet that's exactly what he did. And now he's working on trying to hatch what's going on with organic foods.
And when you said that he was working for the Department of Statistics, also, he was an expert at knowing how to present statistics in a way that would favor what he wanted it to favor.
Well, that's exactly right. And so what we're looking at is another article that's being published that's trying to give the public the wrong idea about something in an effort to protect the sponsors who are no doubt providing some kind of financial income for Stanford University. And we know that Stanford, because this is public record, takes about $500 million a year in donations, but doesn't list who they are, which means they don't want you to know who they are. And that, of course, is always a reason. Then we get to the stuff that Dr. Marcia Angel came up with years ago when she was talking about all the problems that we have in medical research with articles that are unreliable, not scientific, and trying to mislead the public. She was the editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine and had been with the New England Journal of Medicine for 20 years, and she resigned her job as the chief editor, making statements saying that the information coming across her desk was so unreliable that she wanted nothing more to do with it. So she had a tremendous number of comments that she made about the pharmaceutical industry, its effect on research, because, they spend $90 billion a year on research. The National Institutes of Health spends only $30 billion. So the major contributor of the research in the United States, okay, that goes into making scientific, quote, scientific articles comes from a resource that you can't trust. because they have such a conflict of interest that they do all kinds of things to put articles out that we know are unreliable and outright misleading. And here we go again.
So what you're saying is that the scientists sell out for grant money a lot of times.
Well, they sell it for all kinds of things because there are conflicts of interest. And a lot of the time, there are good scientists doing the research. But the problem is they say, thank you, Mr. Scientist, for doing the research. They pay them their money. And then they go back and they write the article for them. So they make it say what they want to and stress the things that they think are worth having there. And that, of course, is not good science.
Anyway, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the pesticides, because pesticides are not just on produce. They're also mostly in dairy and meat products.
Those, well, 80% of our pesticide loads come from meat and dairy. The rest is from vegetables. That's right.
And because with the meat and the dairy, they're stored in the fat.
That's right.
And also, one of the other problems with organic produce is that it's getting contaminated with cross-pollination, also just from the breezes. You know, when the wind blows it to the, they call it a drift, to the organic crop. So it's really difficult to get food that's 100% organic now.
Or
and then
GMO.
a lot of these researchers too that we were talking about, they're trying to resist having products that are genetically engineered labeled as such. And so we end up eating a lot of genetically engineered food that we don't even know about. But if you eat organic food, you're pretty much not going to get genetically engineered food. But I just wanted to also mention that the Environmental Working Group has a shopper's guide to pesticides just to help people, because, you know, life is about choices. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people complain that you can't find a particular food that's organic, or they might think that it costs more than what they want to pay. So I think it's good if you could go to the Environmental Workings Group and look up their Dirty Dozen Plus and mm-hmm. also the Clean 15.
Right.
But I want to mention just a few of them. Some of the Dirty Dozen foods to avoid that are not organic. This is the reason to buy organic: apples and celery and bell peppers and peaches and strawberries and nectarines and grapes and spinach and so forth. And then there's other things too. And then also with the Clean 15, the ones that are lowest in pesticides, that if you, you know, we're so inclined, you could buy these things that were not organic, would be like onions and pineapples and avocado and cabbage and asparagus, eggplant, cantaloupe, grapefruit, watermelon, mushrooms, things like that.
Right. Well, see, that's important to know, because it gives you an idea of what you can eat that's the least dangerous for you. But I think nobody would argue, at least anybody with common sense would argue, that eating food that's natural, okay, that we've been eating for thousands of years is what we want. When we start to do things to the food, it changes what Mother Nature has done and changes the relationship that we as the consumers actually get from it. And when you look at this study that was done, what they're trying to do, and they published this, by the way, in the Annals of Internal Medicine, so now we've got another journal that ought to be ashamed of itself for publishing articles like this, saying things like, they didn't find strong evidence that organic foods are more nutritious or carry fewer health risks. And, of course, they said, well, there is a slight increase in the amount of pesticide, but they didn't think it was significant.
Well, because they said that the amount of pesticides were at a safe level. Well, what is a safe level of a poison? Like we were saying earlier, especially if you're eating a lot of food. I mean, you're not just eating one pea.
Sure. And then you look at the combined effects of multiple different kinds of pesticides. You look at DDT, okay, and its effect on breast cancer, and let's say it causes it to increase by one unit. Then you look at it at one of its partners, DDE, and it too causes one unit of breast cancer to increase. But if you put them together, you don't get two, you get four times the risk. Now, if you're looking at hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of pesticides and insecticides and things that are put on food, you're looking at something that's never been studied in any rational way. So what we've been doing for the last 50 years or more is a giant experiment on the human race, trying to see how many pesticides we can put in there and see what happens to people. And then we wonder about why we have an epidemic of cancer and other diseases that are caused by inflammation. This whole epidemic of chronic diseases we're having is rampant, and that's why.
It's interesting you would mention DDT because we don't use it in the United States anymore, but we do.
Banned, that's right.
We export it, and then we buy the food that it's been used on from other countries.
Talk about the innovative ways that we do what we do to make things turn out like they do. The other thing that they really talked about is that that even though there are these problems, they didn't feel like there were any changes in the content, the vitamin content, of organic products. And they said only one nutrient that they measured, one called phosphorus, was significantly higher in organically grown produce. But at the same time, it may not be the biggest thing that there's a difference in nutrient content. But if you're talking about non-crop rotation in different kinds of produce, then you're looking at deficiencies in lots of minerals, because where do you think the minerals come from? They come from the soil. If you use them up, they're gone. And they, who knows, you'd have to bet they didn't do that particular experiment. So what they're trying to do is get you to move away from buying organic food and support the pesticide industry and to support the produce people who are providing all this produce for us in a way that sells their products rather than the organic food industry. And there's been a shift in the last about, I'd say, 12, 13 years of $3.6 billion to $24 billion. So we're talking about a huge market here.
Organic is better also for our environment, and it's also better for animal welfare. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that I was also thinking about when you were talking about the soil and all that is that, did you know that when they grow strawberries that are not organic, that they fumigate the soil?
Right.
So it's like all these gases and everything are going right up inside the fruit. It's nothing that you can wash off.
No.
There are some fruits that you can wash them off and use a little white vinegar and so forth, but then there are others like the strawberries that you can't.
Well, you do the best you can. You know, you wash them for sure if they're not organic. In fact, you wash them anyway. And then you make sure that you're not consuming things without peeling, you know, like the lettuce, the outer leaves, but you're still going to get stuff inside the vegetable that you can't get out. And that's what we're dealing with here.
Well, another thing this is making me think about is soy. It's genetically engineered by Monsanto,
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of conflict of interest going on with that particular company, as many people are aware of. But one of the things that they do is that they put so many different kinds they genetically engineer it so that the soy can withstand a multitude of pesticides without it killing the plant.
So they might put 15 times the amount of pesticide on the plant now because it won't kill the plant, but it doesn't say what it's going to do to you.
And then they're putting soy in all
everything.
These kind of like health food drinks and so forth, and trying to push it like it's this health food. And if it's not organic, I mean, just... I think it's poison.
Yeah.
But even if it's not organic, you know, maybe that's another topic for another day. But, I mean, soy does have a lot of hormones in it.
Well, that's right. So we're looking at a disaster here that is really trying to undermine what's going on in safety in our food.
And what's it doing to the bees? We don't even have bees anymore, hardly.
That's right. That's
we rarely see a bee anymore.
That is a dramatic problem.
And we need that for our pollination.
You know, even the New York Times published this. You have to wonder about these major newspapers that have so much power. You have to know who owns them, what are their conflicts of interest, and what can you trust? And that's what we're facing in this country. We need a transition of some kind where we start becoming more interested in helping people rather than just helping people make money. This shouldn't be about money. This should be about service. It should be about helping the human race consume food that's going to nourish them in a safe sort of way. And we're not interested, basically. So we've taken a stand here that doesn't make any sense.
You know, if you would like to join in our conversations or have any questions about health-related topics of any sort, you can give us a call here at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
All right. So this whole topic is one that is so frustrating because we don't have an easy solution without evolving. We have to change the way we look at what's important in life, and we look at our values, and our values have become a mess. I mean, we're more interested in achieving things, in competing, in becoming separate, adversarial, and competitive. And, of course, what's the prize? Money and power. And if you think money and power are what we should be, are things that are going to make us happy, think again.
And nobody is really thinking about the animals. You know, look at what's going on with the animals because of what's going, you know, like if we want to have drink milk, for example. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's think about the cows. So we're not going to drink organic milk. I mean, we drink organic milk, but I'm just saying if they're choosing to not have organic milk and to not take good care of the cows and their living conditions, that's why they end up giving the cows the antibiotics and all the hormones and all the bad stuff that they load those cows up with. If they had cleaner conditions for the animals, then they wouldn't have to be giving them all these things. And also to be fattening them up artificially with these growth hormones and things. We're eating that. We're consuming that. That's what's in your cappuccino.
That's right. Well, you have to have a set of values or ethics that make sense. We need to be supporting one another. We need to be evolving to a point where we're trying to be concerned with what's happening to everything that's involved, not just us, but the animals, the environment, the planet. And if we don't think that way, what happens is we start doing these silly things that are changing around the environment. We have so many pollutants now in our environment that it's a joke. You look at the environmental working group's work on that. They did some studies a few years ago, probably now it's been 10 years, where they measured the number of toxins that were in different people in different parts of the U.S. And they looked for something like 220 different kinds of toxins, and they found nobody who had less than about 70. And that's all stored in our fat and in our body, and it's causing all kinds of problems with our health because these toxic compounds that we've polluted our environment with are causing the epidemic of diseases through epigenetic mechanisms. And that means that it's changing our DNA, it's changing our genes, it's changing our level of inflammation, and it's changing our risk for our survival. We may be the first generation that's going to have a shorter lifespan than the previous one. This is something that needs to be stopped, and we need to pay attention to how we're going about this because we're digging ourselves into a big hole.
So, and there are things that people can use instead of pesticides also.
Absolutely. Organic farming is a very reasonable thing to do, and it's cost effective. Anyway, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888 if you have a question about your health. And we'll be coming back after Vicki's 2020 tip, with which is going to be on the medicinal properties of coconut oil. With does the metabolic syndrome affect cognitive function in adolescents? So stay with us.
Like dragged through bad publicity for a long time. Really gets the appreciation that it truly deserves. You know, it's a good, healthy, saturated fat with exceptional healing qualities and health applications. So one of the things that it does is it's fat burning. And doesn't that sound ironic? There have been solid human studies showing that just 2 tablespoons a day reduce belly fat in 1 to 3 months. It also has brain-boosting qualities. There was a famous study that showed that that coconut oil was associated with cognitive improvement with those that have mild cognitive dysfunction.
Sure, except with Alzheimer's disease, it's a wonderful thing to do. I tell my patients to take 2 tablespoons of that in their cooking 2 or 3 times a day because it provides another source of energy in people who have had what I would call an electrical brownout.
It's also good for clearing head lice. You know, so many times people go to the drugstore and get those insecticides with the permethrin. And combined with anise spray, the coconut oil is superior to that insecticide. Also, it's good for wound healing. It speeds burn recovery. It It's an NSAID alternative. It has anti-inflammatory, analgesic, and fever-reducing properties. Also, it even has anti-ulcer activity. It drink coconut milk because coconut milk has some coconut oil in it. And so it's an antifungal. Coconut oil can treat fungal infections, especially this is good to know with the emerging drug-resistant candida species. It's also a testosterone booster and also reduces testosterone-induced benign prostatic growth. Also, it improves your LDL and HDL ratio. So coconut oil can no longer be dismissed as being that saturated fat that clogs the arteries.
Exactly.
It also is good for your bones, especially if somebody has osteoporosis, and it can help to prevent that damage. And it's also a good sunscreen. It blocks out the UV rays by 30%. And those are the ones that are damaging to the skin. And coconut oil also has a lot of confirmed therapeutic applications. And if you've noticed, coconut oil is that coconut water lately seems to be the thing to drink for energy and restoring electrical, what do I want to say?
Power. It makes ATP.
No. Yeah, not electrical, electrolytes.
Yeah, okay, too. All right, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Spooner here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we have a call from Helen from Florida. Hi, Helen, how are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Doing?
Okay. I just wanted to talk about the pesticide in the food. I know that when I go shopping, I don't buy the conventional vegetables and the conventional fruits because of the pesticide. But the conventional apples run about $1.99 a bag, and then the organic apples are running $4.99 a bag. I live in one of the poorest counties in Florida, and I understand why so many people purchase processed food and pesticide food instead of the organic food, which is a really, really tragic thing that's going on in our society. And with all our unemployed people and all the poor and all the poverty-stricken people, why obesity rates are so high, I don't understand why the government should be giving subsidies to the farmers and to the people that grow the good food, the organic food, but the corporations that produce the processed food, General Mills, Kellogg's, Kraft, the big mega corporations are getting all the subsidies to push their processed products.
You're right. See, the problem you're having, Helen, is you're logical. You're making sense. But the problem is we have conflicts of interest, just like you're saying, that change around what the government does. I mean, here we have the government supporting the corn industry that makes high fructose corn syrup and not supporting the people who are the organic farmers. I mean, it's tragic. And it's also we're getting ripped off by people who are organic farmers, because you shouldn't have to pay twice as much for an apple.
I know, that's ridiculous. Insane. We have an apple tree. It's just loaded with apples. In fact, we should put a sign out and tell all the neighbors to come and pick the apples.
Well, I think what we need to do is make some more sense out of how we do this. We need to be growing our own stuff when we can. Sometimes co-ops work pretty well, but in some indigent areas, that's hard to do.
Farmers markets.
Farmers markets are a good solution, because you're taking some of the middle people out of it. You don't want to go necessarily to a place that's called Whole Paycheck. Because it's going to cost you a lot of money to be able to buy foods that are mostly healthy for you.
Right. Well, we don't have a farmer's market right in my area, which, you know, forces the poor people here. And with the gas prices, they can't afford to go 30, 40 miles to a farmer's market, or go to Native Sun, or go we don't have a health food store in our area. We do have Publix, which does carry organic, vegetables, organic fruits, but they're shipped from California, or they're shipped from Mexico, and they're not local, which I support local farmers. I go to the farm that's maybe about half an hour from me to buy vegetables from her farm when I do have the money. I've been on both sides where I haven't had the money to buy the local good food, and I've had to buy the processed food. I feed a family of five, so if other people who don't have the money go to the grocery store and they have food stamps, say, and there are 99-cent GMO hot dogs, and then right. the Applegate hot dogs, which are uncured, unprocessed, nitrate-free, yeah. nitrite-free, are $4.99 a pack.
Yeah,
guess
right.
which ones they're going to have to buy.
Yeah. Well, see, you
yeah,
raised a good point.
That's
the problem is our community at the grassroots level needs to do something different. Our government is not protecting us from that point of view. We do have money, okay, for things like buying guns and wars and bombs, but we don't seem to have money to protect our environment. We don't have money to protect our food or to protect us. So you've made a great point, Helen.
I know in our area there's a group that's called Farm Fresh to You, and they deliver organic produce to your door.
Yeah, there are lots of places here and there like that, but Helen's point is really well taken. So, Helen, thanks for calling. We appreciate the call. You have a great day. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Spudier with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
The many causes of obesity and its consequences are in the news again. Now, who would expect adolescents to have metabolic syndrome and brain dysfunction as a result of obesity? I mean, this includes having an abdomen that's disproportionately large compared to the rest of their bodies. And when you talk about metabolic syndrome, we're talking high cholesterol, high blood pressure, high triglycerides, insulin resistance. I mean, how often... I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, you're right. This was a New York University study published in the journal Pediatrics, and we previously thought really that adults were the only ones who had problems that were cognitive, that were caused by metabolic syndrome. And to find out that they're worse in kids is really a shock, but yet that's the case.
And many times these kids are being misdiagnosed with having learning disabilities.
Sure.
And the schools are phasing out PE in favor of academics, and yet the kids are getting fat, and it's affecting their brain, so it defeats the goal of improving school performance by contributing to obesity and impaired brain function.
Well, that's right. These kids are not doing well in math. They're spelling or reading. Their attention span is short. Their ability to think is not so good. They have a smaller area in the brain called the hippocampus, which leads to problems. The solution here is we need to be eating well, but not overeating, and we need to move. You know, this program that Michelle Obama has, it's called MOVE, is a good one. We need to exercise, and we need to do that at the school level, and it needs to be done at every level of education. We've taken physical education pretty much out of our educational system for kids. And what's happening is they're all getting fat, they're inflamed.
And getting diabetes, too.
Well, that's what you're seeing is this type 2 thing that it's spreading like crazy. Anyway, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. It's time for a station break from the Progressive Radio Network, and we'll be back right after with Can Prenatal Smoking Cause Adolescent Obesity? So stay tuned for more Prescriptions for Health Radio. Welcome back to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Spoon here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888 if you have a question about your health or want to join in our conversation.
We all know that smoking is not good for our health, and we also know that a pregnant woman shouldn't smoke because that's not good for her baby's health. Or hers.
Yeah, it's not good for anybody's health, or even if you're around them with the passive smoking. That's right.
We've all heard that smoking can increase the risk of premature birth and also contribute to a low birth weight. And now it's been found that if you had a mother that smoked while you were in utero, it can increase your risk of adolescent obesity. Isn't that ironic? You know, that you could be born premature with low birth weight and end up a fat kid.
Well, that's right. I mean, look at the effects of smoking anyway to begin with on children. It increases their fetal heart rate. It, as Vicki said, it increases miscarriage and birth, stillbirths. It increases the risk for sudden infant death syndrome for the SIDS. And now adolescent obesity. Interesting. Some people think that the connection is because the amygdala, which is the processing of emotion center and a place where we store our emotions is made smaller by smoking, and that somehow correlates with an increased appetite in the amount of fat that people consume. So the reason really isn't clear, but it's suspected to be related to this this dietary preference for fat.
Isn't that interesting? I wonder how that would compare to the Atkins diet, which is a high-protein, high-fat diet to lose weight,
well,
you know?
A lot of the times we're making guesses at what happens, and those guesses take us down the wrong path. When we're looking at this particular study, which was published in Archives of General Psychiatry, it was done in Canada on 378 adolescents, and 180 of them were exposed to smoking, 198 weren't. And what they found is that there was a significant increase in the problem with obesity or increased weight in those people exposed to smoke. So it's one of those things that just sort of, you know, you see it and you go, wow, that's amazing, but pay attention to it. And, of course, we shouldn't be smoking anyway.
Well, again, this just reinforces the importance of prevention, you know.
Well, look at all the things that happen when you smoke. I mean, we know about the lung disease and the cough and the lung cancer and the heart attacks and strokes, and of course, asthma and different kinds of allergic problems. It's anything but healthy. So we need to take care of ourselves and use our common sense and stay away from those ads, okay, that are put out by the tobacco industry. I'm not one for prohibition because I don't think it works, but I am one for education. And I think there's a lot we can do in our schools. It's more so. There's more that we could do to charge higher taxes for people who are producing tobacco and cigarettes, because they're getting away literally with murder, because there are probably close to 300,000 or 400,000 deaths that are tobacco related every year. And the cost to us is a lot more than what we're taxing. We're looking at hundreds of billions of dollars of costs to the American public because people are smoking. And then we've got the tobacco companies coming out saying the things that they are, which is outright lies. And people who are making all kinds of statements about it that are misleading. So you're looking at people doing things that are just wrong.
Well, a mother's behavior is really important when she's pregnant, not just for smoking, but also her diet.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a study that recently came out about how the baby's and the mother's diet determines the baby's risk of obesity. So if the mother's diet during pregnancy is high in fat, and then if the baby's diet becomes high in fat after birth, it can lead to obesity. So the mom can eat fat during her pregnancy, but not after if she's nursing, to affect the baby's risk of obesity. Now, this seems weird to me.
Me too.
Because breast milk is 60% fat.
Right.
A baby's brain is 60% fat. But the other thing in this article is that they don't talk about healthy fats and unhealthy fats, because,
right,
you know, that pseudo Erasmus book about fats that heal and fats that kill.
Yeah, right.
Because they were talking in this article more like the fat was an unhealthy thing for the mother to be.
Well, see, we've got a fat phobia in this country. Actually, fat is your preferred food. It's what makes you able to run your life. That's where you get your energy from. When you do special tests to measure what your metabolic rate is and what you're consuming for energy by measuring oxygen consumption and CO2 production and then exerting yourself, you will burn fat as your primary fuel, not sugar. Most people think that it's glucose that provides us with our major fuel. The only time you really burn sugar is after you've gone to exhaustion. So when we exercise people looking to see what their basal metabolic rate is, which gives us an idea about thyroid hormone levels, and also exercise them to maximum capacity to give us some kind of idea of how well they produce ATP, which is, of course, the energy currency of the cell, we find that there's a transition where we shift from burning fat to burning sugar, and when we do, it builds up lactic acid and drives us into acidosis, and that's what makes us tired. So people who have chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia or Lyme disease or cancer or other illnesses where there's a shortage of energy production, congestive heart failure, another example of that, when you exercise people, you can see how long it takes to take them from burning fat to shift over to burning sugar, because oxygen consumption changes when that happens, because you're not consuming oxygen anymore. You're doing anaerobic metabolism, which burns sugar that makes you acidotic. And so these are the kinds of things you have to know and study before you can understand that fat is your friend. It's not your enemy, but you don't want to eat trans fats because those will kill you.
And like I said in my 2020 tip about the coconut oil, if you have 2 tablespoons a day, they did a study that showed that it could reduce belly fat.
Well, their fats are a good thing. They've just gotten a bad rap. So we need to know which fats are the right ones. Of course, you have to pay attention to calories as well, but that's the deal. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Zabuda here with Nurse Vicki, and it's time for her last 2020 tip, which is going to be on how to make healthy, delicious, soft foods if you have dental issues or for your baby or elderly grandparent. Then I'm going to come back and talk about, is there a difference between affluent people and people in the lower and middle class as far as their attitude is about how to get along with each other?
Week I went to the dentist, and I have a retainer due to some TMJ issues that I had and so forth, and he tightened this up and added some wires and things, and oh my gosh,
like fun?
My teeth hurt so bad, and I couldn't eat anything that was even soft, so I had to drink everything or else puree it. And I was surprised because I'd made some deviled egg, and I thought, oh, I could eat that deviled egg, you know, salad, mm-hmm. You know, egg salad.
Yeah, no problem.
And
huh?
I couldn't chew the white part that was grated up in there. So I put it, I put it in my Vitamixer, and you know, there's other types of high, you know, they advertise them on TV all the time. All these blenders that are super blenders, different brands and so forth. That just happens to be the brand that we have. But anyway, I put it in there, and oh my gosh, is that good? I mean, I think I'm going to do that every time. And you could use it as a spread even. And then I was thinking that it'd be good for baby food and for elderly. Like my mother's 96, and she was just having a problem with choking and so forth
and
with some of her
too.
Teeth
yeah.
and some of her teeth. And so she was on soft food, and I thought, what a great thing to share with people. Now, when I made the deviled egg, I put things in it like, you know, I put some healthy organic mayonnaise that's made with flaxseed oil.
Yeah.
But I also put some mustard and relish and some celery and cucumber and a little seasoning and so forth, and it was really good. And then there were other things, too, you know, like smoothies. There are a lot of these healthy powders out there that are advertised all the time, but you have to be careful which ones you use because when you read all the ingredients before you choose which one you want to do. But you can add a lot of things to them. There are some that are like for sweeter drinks that you can use with yogurt and throw a banana and some fruit and things like that in there. And those are really yummy to me. That's tastes just as good as ice cream or a milkshake to do that when you put all that delicious fruit in there. And then you can put a handful of pumpkin seeds or nuts or anything that's healthy, chia seeds and a little bit of that matcha tea or some acai powder, a lot of choices, and flaxseed oil to put in there. And then for the green drinks, I always do these green drinks with the green powder, but I put in spinach and parsley and whatever I happen to have in the kitchen that's a green vegetable, just throw that in there with, again, with some flaxseed oil and some other healthy things. And then I made some applesauce ahead of time when I was going to have this done in my teeth, and I thought, I'll be able to eat applesauce. Well, I couldn't chew the applesauce because of the skin.
Yeah.
So what I did was I threw all that in the blender. I made the apple. All you have to do to make applesauce is so easy. You just cut up the apples and put them in some good water on the stove and I added some raisins, and then I put that in the blender, and I thought, heck, I'm going to add a handful of walnuts. So I added a handful of walnuts, and it was absolutely delicious, and I didn't have to bother to chew anything. However, if you can chew, it's better to chew things because it helps to, you know, with your saliva to digest it and everything. And one other thing I want to tell about is the broccoli soup.
Oh, that's really good.
Because it tastes like it has cream in it, and it's really actually low in calories. It's a very healthy thing. So you cook up some broccoli, and you boil some potatoes, and you cook up some onions, and then what you put in this blender is broth, and you put all those ingredients with it, with some
lemon,
seasoning
huh?
and some lemon. That's
yeah.
it. And
oh, it's delicious.
It tastes like it has cream in it.
No, that's just
but
soup.
The potato is what makes it seem like that.
It gives it the consistency, yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah, and then you can make almond milk. I mean, there are a lot of things you can do, but I just wanted to share some of those things that I thought it might help somebody, give them ideas. And it's better to make your baby's own food anyway. And, you know, sure. With bananas, it tastes like dessert if you just mash up bananas. And now I found you can buy organic banana flakes. Uh-huh. And if you add a little bit of organic milk or almond milk or even just some good pure filtered water to that, oh my gosh, it's like dessert. It's better than a pudding.
Well, one of the places where this should be used, where it's not used in any serious way, is hospitals, where people can't, a lot of them can't do much, but they can take some liquids that way. And, you know, hospital food is well known for not being organic, not being particularly nutritious. And that's one place where we need the best nutrition we can get, because where else are you going to have more metabolic stress that requires all the nutrients you possibly need, and usually in increased amounts because our demands are higher because we're sick.
And they're always giving the patients Jell-O, you know.
I know, that green Jell-O.
It's either full of sugar, or if it doesn't have the sugar, it's full of the artificial poisoning sweeteners, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, juicing would be something, another thing that would be good to do in hospitals. And I know years ago when I tried to arrange that for one of my patients, I got all kinds of flack from the hospital staff, and finally got a call from the chief of medicine, who says, you know, Len, you can't order that at this hospital because we can't do that. And I said, well, we can't buy a blender, or we can't buy a Vitamixer, or we can't, you know, do something to actually make real juices. He said, well, we don't do that. And I said, well, would it be okay if I brought in a box of C's candy? Because that's what everybody does.
Yeah, they bring
it
to
dead silence. He says, I'll let you do it this time, but not next time. And I said, well, next time we're going to have another battle. Because we should be focusing on taking care of people, giving them the nutrients they need, supporting their metabolism when their metabolic demands are increased. And we don't think about that. And to think about putting pesticides in there on top of it, that's increasing the load that your body has to detoxify. It makes no sense. And yet that's what we do, because why? It's about economics. And don't tell me it's going to cost that much more to provide organic food or highly nutritious food that's done by a nutritionist. When you hire dietitians, and I'm sorry, dietitians out there, but your organization has become corrupt. You basically have made ties with the high fructose corn industries that are wrong, and that's unfortunately carried over to hospitals, although it's changing. So we need to get our dietitians to band together, form an organization that doesn't have these conflicts of interest, and improve the standards of what they're recommending for people in hospitals and people who are sick.
And get together with nutritionists.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the PhDs in nutrition really know a lot about nutritional medicine. You take a course from Jeff Bland, for example, who's PhD in nutrition. It's world famous for the last 30 years in providing great nutritional content, and you've got something that's really important there. I think the whole idea of orthomolecular medicine, which is a way of looking at cell biochemistry and what should you eat to promote the best way that you can produce energy in your body depending on what's wrong with you, is another very powerful way to go. Now, our dietitians are not doctors. They don't know how to do that kind of medicine. We should have specialists who can go into the ICU, particularly who are doctors or pediatricians or endocrinologists, who can give advice on how do you handle the metabolic issues from the point of view of providing good food. And then using natural things whenever you can. You know, orthomolecular medicine is something that was invented basically by Linus Pauling, who really knew a lot about nutrition. Plus, he won a couple of Nobel Prizes, one in biochemistry. So, he was right on the mark there. We should be using molecules that are compatible with what's found in nature in the human body. Every time we put something in the human body that's not natural, we pay a price for it. And so we've got a whole pharmaceutical industry that's out there trying to do what it can to make us recover from the illnesses that we have, at least from their symptoms, but almost always, in fact, you'd have to say always, using things that are unnatural, because you can't patent things that are natural. So what we've got is an industry that we're supporting that's going to put toxic things in our body, and admittedly, in some situations, it's life-saving. If drugs are used wisely, they're a wonderful addition to our armamentarium. But if they're used as the first cab off the rank, okay, as the first choice, then we got problems, because we're putting as our first choice something toxic in a human body, where we should be looking at things like lifestyle. We don't look at lifestyle so much because we don't take it seriously. And there is no medicine that's more powerful than lifestyle.
And one of the things that's included in a healthy lifestyle is a reduction of stress.
Absolutely.
And there was an article that just came out this week talking about the affluent and the poor and how they react differently and cope differently to chaos during stress and disasters.
Right.
Now, they were talking disasters like earthquakes and economic crises and recessions and political instability and hurricanes and things like that.
Sure.
Now, don't shoot the messenger when we tell you what they found in this study.
Well, just a minute. Don't give them the idea that we're wealthy either, Vicki, because we're certainly not. I'd say we're middle-class people.
So the rich tend to hang on to material assets, and the poor spend more time with friends and family, is what they came to with this study. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about how to explain these differences and how this affects a person's health.
Okay, well, first of all, the study came out of the University of California in Berkeley, and it was published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology in August, of this year. So we're looking at a study came out of a good place, and they basically looked to see how people who had a lot of money would react in situations like Vicki described. And what they found is what she said, and that's that wealthy people were more interested in and had more comfort in their possessions and making sure they had enough money. Whereas people who didn't have much in the way of material wealth would reach out to one another. It seems to me that the values of the poor people were much better than the values of the people who were wealthy.
And I think you could relate better to this with an example, because they showed that if the wealthy were offered a higher paying job that was, say, out of the state or in another country, that they were more likely to take it and cut ties, whereas the poor would prefer to stay home with their family and friends and turn down that job. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, it really is. And what it's telling us is there's something wrong with our values. I mean, what are we teaching people as they're growing up to become adults? It's basically that success means make a lot of money or have a lot of power or be important in some way because you can contribute something that people respect. And it may be a rock star, and there's nothing wrong with rock stars, but I don't see them as the major contributors of the things that we need in our society to be a really healthy society. Even though music is a powerful tool.
Well, I know we've traveled to some third world countries and noticed the difference in the classes. And I've noticed that the poor people, on the ones that I've seen and the ones that I've met, I mean, they just seem like they're so happy and they're so connected with one another. And they smile and they wave and they want you to take their picture.
Yeah.
And they have these little tiny stands next to each other and they're playing cards and the kids are kicking a little tiny ball around, and they just seem like they're so connected with one another. And then you notice the wealthy, and their houses are all barred up, and I don't think that.
Well, it's the value isn't right. We've got this independent, adversarial, competitive kind of attitude that become the social values that we have. And what we should be doing is evolving to more enlightened human beings who are more interested in sharing and giving and living and bringing up the general standard of living for everybody so that we can support one another. The idea of being independent and adversarial and to try to be powerful is kind of a sick way of doing things. That's what we've done throughout our history. It's always been a competitive thing to try and have enough money. And when you think about how people developed over the last 1,000 years, well, there have been reasons why money's important that make a big difference. Because if you don't have food, you can't survive. And look at some of the problems we're having in Africa now where there are pandemics of people who are dying from malnutrition. This isn't right, and it should be dealt with. Where's the compassion and caring? It's just
community
not there.
The feeling of community.
Exactly. So the have-nots understand it in this country and should be supported. And some of them, of course, are the homeless, people who are living on the streets, where we're not really taking much interest in to try and support. I mean, these are the people very often who are the veterans from our wars who are suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome, who are having a hard time with life. And we're not there to bail them out when they were there to bail us out. We need a lot of evolving to do, Vicki.
Well, there's differences, too, in the way people react to the disasters that we were talking about. Like, I remember talking to Helen Farkas, who was a survivor of the Holocaust, and she was telling me how the people were so connected with one another and supported and took care of each other and looked out for each other. Shared their little tiny bits of food whenever they had it, you know, instead of hoarding it because they really cared about each other. And then you think about other groups of people that are just the opposite, and they're hanging on to it and not wanting to share and and taking advantage of disasters and breaking windows and looting and all that kind of thing.
Well, that's right. Well, that becomes a big issue, and we need to pay attention to things like that and model what we want to so our kids will do the right thing. It's about that simple.
Well, if you have any questions about your health and you want to give us a call, we got about five more minutes here for you to get it in. The number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. So tell the truth. Do you exercise and diet to look good or to be healthy? Okay, both, but what motivates you the most?
Yeah, busted.
Well, research suggests for young adults anyway, appearance matters more than health. The University of Missouri did this focus group research project involving interactive theater to encourage discussion on this topic. So young people tend to think more about calories, I guess, than nutrition. Maybe
well, they don't want to be
dessert instead of a
they're
meal.
They're watching their waistline and they're going to the gym and they're doing whatever they can. So they'll be appealing to other people. And some of that, of course, is a sexual thing because men want to look good to women and women want to look good to men. And procreation is one of our most powerful drives, aside from saving our lives if we're threatened or from having not enough food. That becomes the major thing that runs a lot of our life. And usually body image leads to things that are not a good idea.
I don't think it helps either with some of the magazines, you know, with these digitally enhanced figures that the models have.
Because, well, they're so skinny, too. I mean, it's not healthy.
But a lot of it's – and some of it's not real either because they just enhance them. It's just the opposite of enhance. They can make it – Look however much they want them to weigh.
Yeah. Well, I think people are more interested in looking good than they are in eating wisely because they also are kind of confident about their health. You know, there's an old Chinese proverb that says, before age 30, you cheat disease. And it's true because you've got all this youth and great metabolism going on. But as you age and you go beyond the age of 30, disease starts to cheat you. So when you're 15 or 20 or 25, something under 30, you can take advantage of the things that you'll pay for later in life because you'll use up your reserves.
Well, this study shows that young women feel more valued for appearance than for personal qualities or abilities.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of people are out there just for the sex, you know. There's a lot of that. I mean, there's a lot of attraction that has to do with how you dress and what you look like.
When you look at some of the styles these days, I mean, a lot of the girls are wanting to be hip, you know, and wear clothes that are the style, and they really don't realize, I think, a lot of the time what they're looking like. I mean, it's just over the top. When we were in school, we weren't even allowed to show our knees.
Yeah, well, it
let alone
different.
Wear halter tops and pierced belly buttons and all the rest of it.
Well, I mean, look how it was when you were in the ICU in your short little dress with the bunny tail on, trying to make it pleasant for somebody who was an ICU patient. I mean, we did lots of things, and it's relative to depending on what particular generation you're from. We all do things that are a little bit different. And as the values change, small changes are perceived as sexy or as better looking. And so that's what's happening here and why appearance is more important than health in young people.
Well, the other thing is, too, is that I think some of this leads to eating disorders. And
Absolutely. Also
when you're in college, a lot of the kids are pressed for time to cook healthy or they might not even know how to cook.
That's right.
But there are a lot of society rewards for looking good, and it's not just around sex.
All right, that's right. So We're at the close of the show. I'd like to remind you that we'll be back live to talk about what's new in the news and health and take your questions every Monday morning on PRN.FM and drspooter.com from 10 to 11 Eastern Time and 7 to 8 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for health will also be available 24/7 on drsabuda.com as well as prn.fm.
And if you enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, you can go to drsaputo.com. You can go to Dr. Saputo Radio on drsaputo.com and check out our fast track videos. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
See you next week. Have a great week.